T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's a movement. It's a revolution. And I'm excited to be a small part of it.
Rich Campbell.
I'll get up with you. Have some coffee.
Chicago Tribune Bears beat writer.
Everything that happened, every last word is in my notes.
Bringing you the latest from Hallis Hall.
If we feel like something's best for the Bears, that's what we'll do. We appreciate and we like and we trust with where Eddie's at right now. But we got to continue to give him opportunities to really build that trust even more.
Asking hard-hitting questions.
What impressed you about Leonard Sack?
Rich Campbell with Bernstein. Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
It's the Bernstein and McKnight Show. We're broadcasting live from the Respect 90 Try Not to Suck Celebrity Golf Classic. Joe Madden's going to lead the shotgun tip-off at noon this afternoon at the Bryn Mawr Country Club. Looking forward to it. Looking forward to talking to a whole lot of Cubs guests throughout the morning, but we've got some Bears to handle here. Mark Grody is in for Dan. We head out to the hotline, and it is Rich Campbell, Chicago Tribune's beat reporter for the Chicago Bears. Rich, first and foremost, congratulations, man, to you and the family. Well done. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, the sleep is few and far between, but best I can tell, Mitch Trubisky has played as much football as I have in the last 2 weeks, so I feel like I can get back into the water here pretty easily.
Yeah, some would say that you're not timing your paternity break well with the preseason starting. Others would say you timed it perfectly because you missed almost nothing.
Yeah, I'm going to go in the perfect category. And because my wife went into labor 90 minutes after that Soldier Field practice where the kickers had a great night a couple weeks ago, I thought it was perfectly timed. And then, of course, the kicking kind of spiraled downward a little bit from there all the way to yesterday's news, which I jumped right back in for. So, yeah, I'll go with perfectly timed.
Did you think, is my theory that Eddie Pinheiro may have won the kicking job, at least this portion of it, from that Soldier Field night during which he was 12 for 12?
It's possible. I mean, I think really the deciding factor between the two guys was the leg strength, because their production was just about identical in practices and preseason games. I mean, the difference, they had the same number of makes, and the difference, I think, was 3 misses for Fry. So almost identical, but the one thing that set him apart was the leg strength. And yeah, Mark, at Soldier Field that night, August 3rd, when Pinheiro hit a 60-yarder going south, you just can tell. You can just tell the way the ball explodes off the leg. And go back to what Ryan Pace said. I believe it was at the Combine. It's either at the Combine or the owners' meetings, as they were starting to add kickers to this tryout, Redford Jones, Chris Blewett, and we asked him, what do you look for in these tryouts? And that's what he said. He said it's the leg strength, and he, you know, indicated that the weather late in the season at Soldier Field is a real factor they consider when trying to decide who to sign, who to consider an audition. And so I think that's really what set him apart. Now Eddie's got 2 weeks, really 10 days, to take ownership of the position and prove that he deserves to stay. And I'm not sure he's going to do that. Connor, I've been trying to think about my answer to the inevitable question at the end of the hit, because my previous answer is no longer available. But yeah, I'm not sure Eddie will hold on here, but at least he does have the leg strength. If he ever harnesses some consistency with that, he could kick in the league for a long time.
Well, see, that's the thing. You had Kare Vedvik and his name out there for everybody who listens to the show and your hit specifically for a little while. So obviously we knew they were kind of looking around for things. I wish we could know now what the appetite is for the Bears to bring in someone else to compete with Pinheiro over the next 10 days. It would seem to me that it'd probably be more beneficial to let him have all of these kicks. But that means if he fails in some of these kicks, the guy you bring in will have had 0 kicks in a Bears uniform by the time you bring him in.
Yeah, and I think that's important because the Bears have some equity in Pinheiro at this point. I mean, they've had him since early May, and he's gone through all the data testing with Jamie Cole and all the ball flight tracking that they've done, and they've gotten to work on his technique. And Pinheiro, when we talked to him yesterday, said he's gotten a lot sharper, getting his alignment proper, when he is walking off his steps backward and getting ready to kick, he feels like that has helped him. And so this whole thing is about trust. And I'm with you. Go back a little bit. Brad Biggs had in his 10 Thoughts piece on Saturday morning that the Bears offered the Ravens a conditional fifth-round pick for Vedvik. Okay, so that tells us that was the price they were willing to pay to get out of both of the guys they had in camp. Now, was Vedvik a special case? You know, was he that good that the Bears are saying, hey, we'd pay for this guy to get away from Fry and Pinheiro, but the rest of these guys who are going to get cut from other teams or whoever's out there on the street, yeah, we'd rather go with our guy. I mean, obviously, we'll find out the answer to this in about 2 weeks, but I'm with you. I just think that if it comes down to a tie or any type of uncertainty, you go with the guy who you've been with, who you know his mental makeup a little bit, and you've gotten to work with him mechanically over these last few months. And so I do think Pinheiro has a big advantage based on what happened yesterday, that he will be the guy kicking on September 5th.
And Rich, we both know that Eddie Pinheiro, he's got a little bling to his personality. He's
yes,
a fun guy to talk to. He's confident. Do you think that played a part at all? I don't know if Matt Nagy, I wasn't there yesterday at Hal, so I don't know if Nagy said anything about personality or if it really is just about the big foot.
Yeah, in fact, he really downplayed the leg strength. And when we asked him about decisive factors, Nagy just said it was the overall body of work that Pinheiro put up against Fry. Well, that body of work, it goes without saying for everybody who's watched these guys kick, that body of work includes a very powerful leg. So to us, we know that was the deciding factor, this leg, because Nagy's talked so much about production, but again, it was identical. I mean, it's just about identical. So in terms of the personality, Nagy mentioned that he likes, you know, the quote unquote swag and all this. I'm not sure Pinheiro has the swag. I mean, he's not dripping confidence necessarily. I think he has a very healthy perspective and awareness about he still needs to prove as a kicker. And he was very clear about that yesterday, saying, we're all on thin ice. And if we don't make kicks, we're gone. Okay. You know, so that's not a guy who's going, this job's mine. I've got this. I'm going to make everything. He knows he's got to prove himself. But I do think the Bears, I think management likes the edge. He's got a little bit of an edge to him. I think the players in the locker room like that as well. Fry, by comparison, was very soft-spoken, humble all the time, not outlandish with any type of mannerisms or anything. So, yeah, I think it works into the whole package of who Eddie Pinheiro is, and the Bears will come to like that if the guy is making kicks and the confidence starts to build, and then you see the edge come out in more confidence that maybe his career could take off in the way the Bears hope it will.
Rich, we had spent some time on the show last week just kind of wondering what the depth looks like at the offensive line, or really throughout the offensive line. Rashad Cowher is a guy they kept on the roster all season long. He picks up a nick. Cody Whitehair's got a finger thing going on. I'm a little bit worried about the depth, especially at either of the tackle spots. Should I be more or less worried than I am already, knowing I'm right about a five always?
Yeah, I think that's probably a healthy spot. And if I were trying to identify maybe a trap door, you know, a booby trap for this team that we don't talk about a lot, it is the offensive line. And the reason I say that is two reasons. Number one, that was the worst part of that team's game against the Eagles in the wild card round last January. The offensive line, I thought, played, if not their worst game of the season, they played one of the worst three games of the season they played. In crunch time, they couldn't run the ball. They didn't protect Mitch well enough, and they were dominated in that game. And so then go down the line. I think the Bears have good offensive linemen. Charles Leno and Cody Whitehair were alternates to the Pro Bowl last year and did play in the game. But the pedigree across the line, it's not like the Bears have drafted, you know, the top eight tackle, the Quentin Nelson. Remember when Roquan Smith was the pick 2 years ago, Nelson was that other guy who was mentioned in that little cloud right there. You know, the Bears don't have that pedigree. You know, you've got Bobby Massey and Charles Leno, guys who have played well, don't get me wrong. But just in terms of what are you going to get consistently from them, they constantly are having to prove themselves, in my estimation. It did not go well in that wild card game. And then with Kyle Long, you know, health obviously a factor for him. The outburst he had at practice last week was something that the Bears are trying really hard to move on from. Cody White here, I think, has a lot to prove. We'll see if the Bears end up extending him by the end of the summer. But in terms of just consistency as a blocker, I think there's something, there's a lot of room for improvement there. And then James Daniels is a project continuing to grow as a center now. So I think it is a booby trap for them, and it's going to be up to Harry Hiestand and the group to make sure that they just lock it down. I think they're capable of doing that, but it's worth keeping an eye on. And I understand, Connor, why your, you know, trepidation level, your anxiety level is pushing the needle a little bit towards the wrong end than maybe some other positions.
Between that and 12 years Catholic school, that keeps me at a five, kind of always.
Well, you should see what Cody Whitehair looks like dressed as a nun.
Terrifying. That's stuff of nightmares.
Gorgeous. So, Rich, the Bears return to practice tomorrow, off day, full off day today for the team. They'll be back out there tomorrow practicing at team headquarters. Did Matt Nagy say anything about, like, if they're going to do another one of those fancy scrimmages like they did the other night, or any indication of what might occur in the third preseason game against the Indianapolis Colts?
Yeah, he did. He indicated that the makeshift scrimmage, I don't really want to call it a scrimmage because it wasn't exactly a true play-by-play sequence that they had last Wednesday. You know, the offense turned the ball over, they usually got the ball right back and just ran the next play on the script. So it wasn't exactly a game, but in terms of the volume, it was. It seems to me like, for as good as the Bears felt about what they accomplished with that, that it would make sense to do another one, but Nagy indicated that they won't. Maybe he could change his mind, and there are obviously some logistics that goes into, you know, bringing in all the lights, et cetera, to hosting one. So, you know, we asked him, are you guys starting on Green Bay? I mean, it just feels like, let's get there already. If the starters aren't playing, let's just get to September 5th. And, you know, Akeem Hicks yesterday said, no, it's just sort of that daily grind of practice. We're working on improving ourselves. Haven't started watching Green Bay film. Haven't started game planning for them yet. And so I would imagine next week, yes, that starts up, but where does that leave them this week? I mean, maybe just another round of working on their install, working on building confidence for the offense, you know, trying to get Mitch going. And it's for us writers, we're looking for, you know, things to cover as the offense and the defense basically sit out here. It's tough sledding, but, you know, this is what Nagy has decided to do. We'll see if they, you know, try to cook up some more situational work this week, because to me that makes a lot of sense.
Does that approach mean it's more or less likely that, and obviously it's very unlikely that Mitch Trubisky plays, but does that approach, and knowing that the way you do as a Bears beat writer, make it any more or less likely to you that Mitch will play?
Yeah, I think he won't. I think they'll probably stick to what they've done. If he played, would it surprise me? I would say yeah. Yeah, it would. And, you know, Nagy has said he is happy if Mitch goes till September 5th without throwing a pass in a game. And I applaud this. I think it's, you know, I was a little bit mixed on this when it came out last year. Remember before that Chiefs game that Nagy was going to sit his starters for the second to last preseason game. And this is a little bit unconventional, but I've thought about it over the last year. And as we're thinking about it again, you know, team health is such an important factor, and it's very unpredictable. You know, the range of fortune that affects this is hard to pin down. You can only do so much to make sure your team's healthy. But what Nagy's trying to do here is to take this unpredictable variable and control it. I think it's really smart, because if Mitch goes out and throws, let's say, 10 passes against the Colts and three of them are touchdowns and all, you have no idea what that means for a Green Bay defense that is game planning against him under the lights in that scenario. You know, these games are totally meaningless. And I actually feel a little bit resentful that we've been duped all these years. The preseason's become such a bad product that I feel like we're seeing its death right now, and that the new CBA in 2 years will have to make some meaningful changes. But in the meantime, Nagy is controlling something that otherwise is an unpredictable but really important variable. So I applaud him. Colleges obviously don't have preseason games. They go live a little bit more in their practices, but these guys go play, and it's fine. Now, I think that's the same thing with the Bears here. I think that they'll be fine without the preseason game action, and I think Nagy is doing a smart thing by making sure, you know, you could say of all the questions, he is guaranteeing that they are going to get to September 5th with Mitch, Khalil Mack, Akeem Hicks, on down the list. And that's a pretty big victory. I mean, even the few injuries they suffered in preseason last year with Leonard Floyd and Adam Shaheen, those came back to hurt them. Those were real, and those had consequences. So I don't blame him one bit, and I think he holds those guys out against the Colts.
So, Rich, I don't feel bad at all making the final question and asking you to do it in 15 seconds or less. The man who makes the first field goal for the Chicago Bears in the regular season is named...
Bears.
I will reluctantly say it's Eddie Pinheiro.
Eddie Pinheiro it is. We're putting you down. First different answer. Rich, thanks so much. Congratulations right. again. Good to have you back. Looking forward to next week.
Thanks, fellas. Enjoy the golf out there today.
That is Bears beat reporter Rich Campbell of the Chicago Tribune. And as he said, we are at the Respect 90 Try Not to Suck Celebrity Golf Classic. It's Joe Madden's charity golf outing. And we will be joined next by Gary Matthews, Bobby Dernier, and Pete LeCocq all at the same time. Mark Grody's in for Dan. We got a whole thing coming up next. It's Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's the Bernstein and McKnight Show at the Respect 90 Try Not to Suck Celebrity Golf Classic. It's Joe Madden's charity golf outing. We are at the Bryn Mawr Country Club. I'm Connor McKnight. Mark Grody is in for Dan Bernstein. And we've got just a panel of radio greatness going on right now. Pete LeCocq, Bobby Dernier, and Gary Matthews all joining us as these guys are getting ready. You guys are all prepped. You've stretched. You've done the pregame routine. You're ready to tee off for this whole thing? Or are you going to go get that done in the yoga pants later on?
We got the Bloody Marys. We got the screwdrivers. We're all set to go.
That's how you loosen up.
We got
up
the Maui gyms.
Event. That's the way to do it.
You golf lefty, Pete?
I do golf
you do.
Lefty.
I thought
yes,
maybe
I do.
You're one of the. It seems like everybody who is actually lefty golfs righty and vice versa, but you're the lefty. And,
I'm a left guy.
And you were saying to me right before we started that you're the best golfer out of these.
No,
three.
Bobby Dernier's the best golfer.
Bobby is.
Not
okay.
me.
Okay.
Bobby's on the stick. Today,
yeah.
He's always on the sticks.
Well, hey, look, it's gin handicap, right? and our great friend Jerry Lasky is sitting right over here, hosting this great day, and also Gary and I get to stay there at his house, right, Gary?
Yeah, get to hang out, which is good. Looking forward to the tournament.
I don't think you guys realize how cool this is for me right here, like with all three of you gentlemen, but in particular Bob Dernier and Sarge Gary Matthews, because I'm 11 years old when it's 1984, and that team, that was the first team that captured my heart, the Daily Double. I mean, where's Sandberg? Is Sandberg going to be here? I mean, we got the number one and number three hitters in that lineup right now, but Sandy, as he was once called and then became Rhino, is not here right now, but I love that 1984 Cubs team until the end.
Can I tee him up just a moment?
Please. That's what I was trying to do
away,
for
Bobby,
yeah.
Yes.
So I let off. I know he's listening. He's probably sitting in his restroom, whatever that resting is.
He's and Instagramming
so,
right now.
Yeah, he's resting somewhere. So Gary hit behind him, and all I know is I heard from Jerry, is Rhino coming? I said, well, I hope. I think I mentioned it to him. And he mentioned something about crickets. And I thought, gee, I get the same thing. Sometimes I leave a message, I hear nothing.
He's a quiet man. He's very reserved, you know,
yeah,
Sarge?
Yeah, Rhino is. I was thinking he would be here, but you never can tell when he would show up. Practical joker he is as well.
Is he?
Oh, yeah. Been that way all his life.
Really?
You know? Oh,
anniversary,
yeah.
By the way. I got to mention, he claimed anniversary, Margaret, you know, and I get
yes.
it.
Yes.
I'm good with that. A trip, maybe? They had somewhere to go.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, the life at home matters. The Respect 90 Foundation, which is why you guys are all out here for the Celebrity Golf Classic today, provides assistance to at-risk children and families in the areas. Joe and Jay, his wife, call home, including Chicago, Tampa, Hazleton, Pennsylvania, Mesa, Arizona, and Southern California. So it's a really cool event to be out here for. And, Sarge, like you mentioned, this is the weather to have this kind of thing in. Yesterday, or last year, rather, a little bit warm. This is nice.
Yeah, this is really nice. I think the course is in really great shape. But while we're talking about Joe, did you get a chance to see him throw out that first pitch last night.
Who's going to talk to him about that?
I mean, seriously.
Whose job is that?
I mean, fellas. I mean, he threw it. I tell you one thing. He did not give up. He was going to make sure that he was not the worst, but he's going to be in that category with a couple of those throws.
For a second, I thought Respect 90 was like, do it 90 times. Hey, I thought that was his plan here.
Try not to suck, but he did.
Yeah. It's like being married. You know, it's like being married. Gary came to my wedding. It was my third wedding, my third marriage. And he said, you got a lot of nerve. And I said, you always knew I was a good two-strike hitter.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Hey, you know what I say about three weddings? That the more the merrier. That's the way life should be.
Yeah. Well, you know what I say? Good luck.
So obviously you guys have to give Joe a little bit of hell for that. I mean, that was...
Are you kidding me? Brutal. It was brutal. But he took it, he had those sunglasses on, and he went like, one more. And he knew that he was going to get it from a lot of the guys on the team, but... It was a ball, but at least he didn't bounce it.
Sure, sure. I watched most of the Sunday night broadcast last night. Sometimes that broadcast itself is a little bit tough for me to listen to, but stuck with it all night last night. And saw, too, you know, Joe kind of wore it a little bit there because they had the footage for him. And really the news of it is the Cubs won a road series for the first time since the end of May. I know you guys keep close tabs on this. I just, from each of you, I'd love to know, I'm sure there was a time, whether it was minors or majors, where you, the squad just could not get away from home and win a ball game. Not so much what happens during that, but how does it feel to be in that? And what's the conversation while it's happening?
Well, you know, with me, when I was first with the Cubs, we didn't do very well. You know, we were lucky to finish in fifth. But then I got traded over to the Royals, and we were winning over 100 games every year. And so it's just, it makes a big difference. And winning is contagious. And, you know, the pressure of not winning a series on the road, sometimes that can be a lot of pressure on these guys. But they played really well last night.
Does it eat at you? I mean, does somebody just have to kind of pop the balloon at some point? Does it happen where you pop the balloon and then you realize the next day somebody goes out there and has a rough one as a starter? And you're like, oh, we didn't do it right. Like, we need to do it again.
Let me say this. The one loss they had in Philadelphia, when Rizzo came out and said it was the worst loss he's ever had, those are the ones that eat at you because those are the ones you feel you should win. You've already counted that as a victory. And then for them to come back, end up giving the Cubs, the Phillies, I should say, a lot more momentum. Now, all of a sudden, they're in the wild card conversation. So I think it has to do with the loss that you would have. I mean, you'd almost rather lose 10-1 than to lose a game dramatically like that, because what it does, it just gives you like a punch in the stomach. Yeah. But that's why you play 162, so you're able to bounce back, hopefully. But good for them. They end up winning a series, which they haven't won in a long time. And it doesn't matter what team, any team winning the series is a good thing.
You know, Gary and I both have a little extra Philly Chicago thing, right?
Right, that's right.
So when I look at it, I looked at it like, hey, kind of good for Philly, you know? They needed that. And for the Cubs, it's August, so I thought maybe they needed that too. You know, we got our butt handed to us. The Phillies swept us, I remember, in 84 at Wrigley.
Wow, I don't remember that.
Oh, early in the year, and it was like, hey, man, you know, are we...
Right.
You know, we paying attention? So you did, and then that propelled us maybe to kind of play better, as Sandberg would like to say. So we did, and I think the Cubs maybe recognize right now they need to play better. So this might help them.
What propelled you guys, if we're going to do this, if we're going to do 1984, what propelled you guys was a four-game sweep over the New York Mets at Wrigley Field. Maybe my favorite moment during that whole season.
Yeah, Sarge threw somebody out at the plate.
Oh,
I remember.
Who'd you throw out at the plate?
One of my really good friends, Keith Hernandez. But you know what? It is they become really big series. And I think at the time, they had a younger ball club.
The
and
Mets.
We were able... to actually intimidate, you know, a little bit more. But I remember that we end up winning against Doc. We're the first team to beat him, and I'll never forget it because we knocked him out, and he was sitting over in that dugout, and he wasn't happy. And I pointed that out to Keith. I went like, hey, man, this could be our last victory against this kid here. Just with his demeanor and the way that he was acting. But you're right. huge series.
And Pete LeCocq, did you not hit a grand slam against Bob Gibson at one point in time in your career?
I did. Actually, it was on Bob Gibson Day, and it was the last pitch that he threw in the major league. So, yeah, it was a long series. It started when I was really young. I walked him off when I was 19 years old at Wrigley Field. And then I went back to St. Louis, and he hit me the first two times up. Well, and then for the next couple of years, he just kept hitting me and not, you know, if I get a hit, he'd hit me. And then 3-2 count, you know, the ninth inning, 6-6 tie on Bob Gibson Day. And then after that, about 10 years later in an old-timers game, he comes running out to warm up, and he drills me in an old-timers game.
Of course.
He's got issues.
Sounds like it.
Throws at his kid in a father-son game, it sounds like. I wonder, you know, from each of you guys, too, it's Pete LeCocq, Bobby Nernier, and Gary Matthews sitting down with us here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. We're at the Respect 90 Try Not to Suck Celebrity Golf Classic, and that, as you can hear in the background, is one of the carts that's going to be trucking beverages around to you guys a little bit later on in the morning. We just got done with a series against the Pirates, the Cubs did. And some of the conversation around the Pirates has been interesting to me all season long. They have years now. They have a philosophy of pitching high and tight, pitching up and in, and not being afraid of doing that. It's a new brand of baseball, and you know, hitting guys isn't looked at the way it used to be, which I think is fine. If you guys think differently, I would imagine. But there is value to throwing tight. There is value to establishing the inner third. I just wonder if so many teams seem to have a problem with the Pirates now and their inability to control when they go in. I wonder if that's as visible to you guys as it is everybody else, or if you see it a little differently.
I don't think anybody kept a closer eye on that than Sarge, so I'll let him have it.
It's the pitching inside and not being able to pitch inside. You know, you can't throw a strike, or if you're going inside, you're going up near someone's head. That's just not right. But as long as you pitch inside, even if you get hit, and it's not up at your head, you know, that's the way the game is played. But when I see some of these guys, in particular, Cody Bellinger, who's having just a MVP-type year, he actually winds up to hit the ball.
Yep.
And he has no fear at the plate, as in Yelich. But good for them for figuring it out, because they don't pitch inside. And those guys are able to hit the ball middle and away. So, I mean, those are the guys that you can see that and know the strike zone that are having some of the better years, though. I don't care about pitching inside as long as you know how to pitch inside. And the guys today, because it's middle and away, you know, their bread and butter is catcher sitting on the outside corner, as opposed to Bob Gibson and his heir, Sandy Koufax, where they're able to sit inside 2-2, 3-2, and come in and get a strike, I think for me is the main difference.
Yeah, one thing your listeners might be interested in, you too. I mean, you played, right?
Did I?
At some point.
I played in high school.
We all played,
Lake
right?
Park. Yeah, Go Lancers.
High school does not count.
No, it doesn't. I played for 2 years and couldn't even make the varsity.
Let me just throw that in there.
Yeah, thank you. Thank
Pete,
you.
I think Pete hit 530 in that senior year.
Yeah, we're talking about high school. So, yeah.
Anyway.
But, you know, I had some good players. We had Robin Yount, Rick Dempsey, Rick Arbach, Kevin Kennedy, Guy Hansen, Larry Durker, Rick Durker.
And your high
all
school
went
team?
To Taft High School.
Jesus. My God.
Now, even my buddy Jerry Lasky over there, he played. And so we're in the backyard, right? Somebody threw a pitch too fast, and it almost hit us in the head, right?
Uh-huh.
And maybe made you mad. Or if it did hit you, you made it quit, right? You're done. Well, that's still going on every day, okay? Mm. If you're not paying attention, these guys throwing 95-plus, they come up in here with some, you know, giddy up on it. You better be able to get out of the way. And if you want to get hit, you know, stand close to the plate, which I did. They did not want to hit me. Because all
you get on base and you steal.
Right. Exactly. I mean, but they wanted to hit him once in a while or him.
Yeah. Well, and as it pertains, like we're talking about Cody Bellinger and the power that exists both in arms and in the bats these days. When, you know, when I was watching YouTube play, the way it worked was Bob Dernier gets on base. Ryan Sandberg, maybe, you know, he developed the power, but maybe he moves the guy over, and then Sarge comes up, knocks him in. Maybe Keith Moreland does the same thing. There was a small ball element that existed. Small ball is virtually gone these days. What do you guys think of the state of baseball? You must be itching to get out there, considering that I think there's no doubt doubt about it that the baseball is juiced.
Well, you know, with the Royals, Whitey Herzog, he was definitely a small ball guy.
Yes,
our leadoff guy was Willie Wilson, and then we had Hal McRae, and then we had George Brett. You know, we had hitters all the way down through the lineup, and small ball was a big thing. Willie'd get on, he'd steal. Hal would get him over, and George would knock him in. And then we'd have good pitching, good defense.
Yeah, there was all like those darn Cardinals. I hated those Cardinals teams of the 80s because they just, every one of those guys, like, stole 20 bases. And then they'd have one thump, like back in the day, they'd have one thumper on the team, like Jack Clark or Bob Horner. And then the rest were jackrabbits. It has changed so much these days.
Yeah, you can put George Hendricks in that mix as well. Those guys had a speed game back then. And if you looked like you were going to bobble the ball, they were just... I mean, jackrabbits from Ozzie Smith.
Sarge used to say, the ball's in left center. We're going to pick it up. And he'd holler at me, holding the three.
Everybody could steal, like Tommy Herr and Terry Pendleton, Willie McGee. You mentioned Ozzie Smith. Like, God, I'm getting annoyed right now. Connor, take it over.
No, all right. I'll give last one for you.
I'm sitting this one out.
Fellas, awesome to have you all. I just wonder, this Cubs team is a different version than the one we've seen over the last couple of years. And one of the things that marks it as different is, they've had a number of guys, whether it's Ian Happ or now Albert Almora, who's been sent down to AAA, Addison Russell, who's been up and down, guys that have had to fight that up and down kind of nature of baseball, having to go down to AAA and come back up. Each of you guys, you know, vested veterans in a clubhouse. I wonder, you know, the kind of advice that you'd give a kid, you know, who you'd seen go out and then come back. You know, something that first thing that you'd say to him if he looked at you and said, hey, you know, I'm back now. I think I got it. What do you need to hear? What do you need to say to a kid like that?
Well, I got to tell you, one of the players on the team for me, not getting really sent down, but obviously having his feelings hurt, not having the years he should, having a real good year this year, Jason Hayward.
Sure.
And that would be, I would tell the kid, never give up, never let anybody say you can't do it, and then keep striving. And Joe's done a great job in really kind of keeping him up, putting him in situations. But the ball he hit the other night, left field, line drive, out of the ballpark. He's got 18, 19 home runs right now. I'm really, really happy for him. He's a great guy. You know, he gets it. Had a little bit of a long swing. He's shortened it up big time this year. So I'm really happy for him. And the advice, again, I'd give the kids is just never give up and keep at it no matter what.
Bob?
Yeah, I'm a little partial because I like that leadoff guy, maybe playing center field.
Yeah.
And when we won it, we had Dexter. And I love that guy and that style of offense. But either way, no matter how it goes, if you've got Chris at the top in front of Anthony and the rest of the guys that can run a little, and so we can first to third them, we can play that game you talked about,
Mark.
And that style of play, not just a three-run homer, then I like it. But we got to be solid defense up the middle nightly.
Fellas, great having you all. Hit them straight. Enjoy your time out here at the Respect 90 Try Not to Suck Golf Tournament. Really appreciate you coming by.
Well, thank you very much. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Pete LeCocq, Bobby Dernier, and Gary Matthews joining the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Mark Grody is in for Dan. That doesn't mean we're not doing the Midday Midway. We are, in fact, set to do it. We're going to have Ron Coomer stop by the show in a little bit, and Grody has his four Bears things coming up at 11. Believe it or not, he learned something from that second Bears preseason game. It's 670 The Score out of the Bryn Mawr Country Club for the Respect 90 Try Not to Suck Celebrity Golf Classic. Bernstein McKnight on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
the Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Been a fun day out here at the Joe Madden Try Not to Suck Celebrity Golf Classic. It's at the Bryn Mawr Country Club, and the weather, I gotta tell you, it looks fantastic out here today. Everybody's gonna have a great time on the golf course, raising money for a great cause, the Respect 90 Foundation. Mark Grody is in for Dan. He and I have had a good time as well. Just got done talking with Pete LeCocq, Bobby Dernier, and Gary Matthews, all of them at the same time, talking baseball, both old and new, you know, this season's version. began the show talking about the Cubs actually winning a road series and what it looks like to me it's going to take for them to win a postseason series, even though the division's still a little bit up for grabs, a little bit of fighting going on. I talked with Rich Campbell, the Chicago Tribune, had a conversation with him about what the Bears have been up to the last couple of days, and then talked with the second this season's winner of the Ken Mastroli preseason award for notorious valorous service, James Waters.
He was valorous.
Yeah, outside linebacker for the Bears, hopped on to talk with us. Smart dude. A guy really knows the position, really knows his stuff. And, you know, we'll get to the four things. At 11 o'clock, Mark Grody actually found four real tangible things that mattered for the Bears over the last couple of days.
Couldn't find five.
Tried for five, got four. We're going to bring them to you. And mayhaps James Vaughter's play and a little bit of linebacker depth is one of those four things. But right now, it's time for the Midday Midway. So you'll remember this story if you're an avid listener of the Midday Midway. I take you back to April of this year. This is at an Ohio Perkins restaurant where a man took an iguana out from underneath his shirt and assaulted a worker and patron there at Perkins with the iguana that he was carrying under his shirt. Remember,
it happens, yeah.
He was carrying an iguana underneath his shirt and started swinging around as a weapon. Well, over the weekend, we had an update. You know, we like to keep you updated on the stories that we bring in the Midday Midway. We don't want to leave you hanging. So the update is as follows. This from the Associated Press. An Ohio judge has sentenced the 49-year-old man who swung and threw an iguana inside a Perkins restaurant to 2 years probation. The man, here's the best part, the man must also not brag about his crime, nor can he live in a house with animals for the next 5 years. I don't know what the terms of the 2 year probation are, but for 5 years, this man cannot brag about having hit and swung an iguana at someone, nor can he have an animal in the house for the next 5 years.
So I have this iguana.
Sorry, I have to leave the room. Yeah. I can't be here when we're talking about iguanas.
Right. What about that iguana?
This is in violation of my parole. There should be no iguana conversation. Okay, I can come back now? All right, we're done with the iguana conversation?
Does he have somebody walking around with him tracking the potential boasting?
Is this a new technology for an ankle bracelet?
I don't know.
Like, as soon as it hears iguana, the ankle bracelet turns on? It's like a smart speaker?
It must mean that when he was arrested, he was just, like, totally bragging about it. It's like, okay, look, dude, you need to take it down four notches. You cannot brag about this anymore.
Can he use code words?
Ooh.
Like, can instead, he said, yeah, so I once took a skirt steak and hit somebody with it inside a TGI Fridays.
There you go.
It wasn't a skirt steak and it wasn't a Fridays, but you know what I'm talking about.
That's an awesome update. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, first of all, this is a little sidebar that I had not planned on doing, but I'm going to. A text message to me says, Mark, can you please give us some Dr. Richard Kimball? You can personally cure a case of the Mondays if you switch the samples. Now, the only reason that I thought about this, and
we're not jukeboxes yet.
Well, we're not jukeboxes, but the fact is I've always wanted to try this on a golf course because I would think that it would be very alarming if I was to be Dr. Richard Kimball on a golf course where one is supposed to be quiet. So
it's true.
So this is probably for the people on the video stream. Let's see what happens if I did Dr. Richard Kimball right now. You switch the samples! So you can make unlock me. Anybody?
Yeah. I think one of the more underrated parts of that part of the movie is the whatever hand motion Harrison Ford is doing while he's just
trembling.
He gives you this like weird spasmatic hand motion while
right. Everybody calm, Miss Dr. Kimball is not well right now.
It's very
so
John
I wanted
Taffer.
To do that. What's that?
It's a very John Taffer type point. Where it's a shaky hand, but authoritative in the same way.
Right.
It's just very Harrison Ford, because everything he does is frantic in all of his movies. Laugh it up, fuzzball.
I didn't kill my wife.
There it is.
I don't care.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Does that count as one?
Counts as one. Right, you want to go back to back.
No.
There are no rules. All right. This we'll just do as a quickie. This is not okay. This is a story where some of you are going to yell into your cars that the only reason they're doing this is so that you talk about it. Yes, that's true. Let's get that out of the way. Consider me suckered in. Hormel the company that brings you Spam is bringing you for the fall. This is not a joke. This is not a promotional thing. They are actually making the product. Hormel, the makers of Spam, are now making limited edition pumpkin spice Spam. I don't know what's in Spam to begin with. I imagine there's probably already some pumpkin spice in Spam. God knows what's in there. But there is now going to be pumpkin spice Spam, and that's our latest sign of the apocalypse.
Wow, I don't know that it needed more foreign particle to be added to it, the artificial flavor of pumpkin spice, but okay.
I guess.
All right. So I want to take you back to the Cubs game last night. It was taking part in a Little League ball club, ballpark, obviously. All the Little Leaguers are there. They're watching the game. They're having fun.
Yeah. It was cool.
It was very cool.
It was cool.
And this interview was amazing. In the seventh inning, they did an interview with one of the Little Leaguers. I don't remember his name or where he was from, but listen to how polished this kid is.
I'm here with Justin Lee, who's from the team for Virginia. And incredibly, Virginia's played two games. You've had two no-hitters. You threw one of them. So you know the whole baseball superstition. You're not supposed to talk to a pitcher with a no-hitter in progress. How did your teammates handle that?
My teammates handled that very well. I was not aware of the situation. I was just up there trying my best. At the end of the game, I found out it was a no-hitter. I was very surprised.
So you didn't know it was a no-hitter in progress?
No, sir. No, sir.
All right, so tell me, you guys, with back-to-back no-hitters, you do anything special to celebrate that?
All we do is just, I guess, put it in the past. It's always the future. We always think about the game ahead. We've never taken anything for granted. Our team's a very hard-working team. Yes, sir.
All right, what's this event been like for you?
It's been crazy. It's never been like this before. It's just, like, so exciting. It's great. Meeting these players, it's amazing.
Okay, tell me about some of the conversations you had with big leaguers today.
Talked about how they hit the ball so hard. It's all about the weight room. Said it. Yeah.
And it was a player that you were excited to meet the most. Chris Bryant of the Cubs. What was that conversation like?
He's so nice. He's just so kind to us. He takes everything with us. It's just so nice.
One more for you. Jerdrick Profar told me, signed about 100 autographs since he's been here. How about you?
A lot. Yeah, I signed a lot.
How many more compared to 100?
300? I don't know. I signed up quite a lot, yeah.
Thank you.
You have to learn your cliches. You're going to have to study them. You're going to have to know them.
11 going on 25.
Someone free that child from the grip of the robot PR man that has seized him.
Wow.
Oh, my God. Cliches. These are boring. I know. That's why we use them. That is the Midday Midway. We do it every day here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Mark Grody is in for Dan. Dan's still on the fishing trip. Mark Grody, of course, well-known as WBBM's sideline reporter for Bears. Each and every Bears game. He has devised a list of four. Tried for five, couldn't get there. Four things, count them, that mattered in the Bears' second preseason game. These are headline-type stuff. You don't want to miss it with all four when we come back on Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.